Good morning. You're very welcome along to the weekend edition here on Highland Radio. Coming up on the programme today, we have not one, not two, well, it is two live musical guests in the studio this week. We'll shortly be joined by outstanding Belfast singer-songwriter Owen Denver, who'll perform live. Ryan McMullen's live with us performing out of his gig in Coldaff. That's coming up a little later. Continuing the musical theme, we explore the links between Ballymacool House in Letterkenny and the Beatles, no less. We hear from a young Cork boy and his chance meeting with Rory McIlroy. We reflect on the Druids' 40th anniversary year, and we hear how the Donegal accent has been again ranked number one. Your views, comments and requests, text us 086 770 0055. Call Yvonne now on 0749 125000, or you can tweet me directly at Greg Hughes, or find me on Facebook searching Greg Hughes. Okay, that and much more besides coming up on the programme, but many going out to enjoy some sports and festivals and what have you this weekend. I just want to let you know about some changes to the sporting world, starting with the Ulster Minor Championship. Donegal playing Derry Beg. Donegal playing Derry. That game's at 1:45 in Owen Beg. It may have been published as elsewhere, but Donegal going to take on Derry. It's 1:45 in Owen Beg. That's a change of venue there. And the Under-14 Championship League final between Bonnachie United and Capri Rovers is now being changed from Finn Park, Ballybuffet, to Drumkeen. Kick-off at 2 p.m. there. I suppose there's a big replay, isn't there, in Finn Park coming up in the next couple of days. The Harps, 10-man Harps, I think, drawing 1-1 last night. So that fantastic run to the start of the season continues. OK, if you are going to the shop to pick up your papers, we got ours thanks to Kelly's Central Mountaintop Letterkenny. These are some of the stories that will greet you. A lot of focus in the red tops, the tabloids. Bill's final fell well. There's a lot of pictures and coverage of the funeral of Bill O'Herlihy. So plenty on that in the papers. That's the front of the Irish Daily Star. The Sun, well, we'll delve inside The Sun. Page 2, RTE has applied to the High Court for permission to broadcast statements made by TD Catherine Murphy about billionaire Dennis O'Brien. The issues raised by the Kildare TD under Dáil Privilege cannot be reported as they are subject of a High Court injunction. And this is, of course, a very difficult situation because you have privilege in the Dáil and qualified privilege then for that to be broadcast and reprinted. But ahead of those statements from the TD, there is an injunction. So people are injuncted from reporting it. So there is something of a crisis, which led to calls for the Dáil to be reconvened next week. I believe that the stage has been poo-pooed. But they call it the Streisand effect, don't they? Whereby you try and stop people talking about something and it ends up twice as many people end up talking about it. But we'll see how that transpires next week. Irish Daily Mirror, their front page also, bye-bye Bill. But inside page 2, taxpayer gives 12.6 million to parties. Well, it's not taxpayer, it's all of us, isn't it? I think it's kind of unfair when we refer to everything as the taxpayer. I mean, it's Irish society, but nonetheless, here's the story. Taxpayers propped up political parties at a cost of 12.6 million euro last year. It emerged yesterday. The Standards in Public Office Commission confirmed the tax-free windfall was handed over to help with the running of the main bodies. So this is in addition to your church gate collections and fundraisers and so on. The biggest slice of the pie went to Fine Gael, 2.2 million. Not far behind them, Little Labour, 1.2 million. Fianna Fáil landed 1.1 million, while Sinn Féin, should I say, recovered 720,000 euro. The party's combined total was 5.4 million, and the rest went to independent groupings and to the Senate. Irish Daily Mail, they say it's a fight for Dáil freedom. TDs from government and oppositions have united to stand up for free speech in our national parliament. They spoke out yesterday against an effective blackout on the media reporting a speech in the Dáil about billionaire Dennis O'Brien's loan arrangements with taxpayers-funded bank IBRC. Interesting, the BBC also declined to cover that speech, which I thought somewhat strange given the fact that I presumed the injunction related to the 26 counties, but the BBC chose not to publish those details as well. Not saying they should or shouldn't, just a comment. The Irish Independent, 566 million, the price of public sector votes. These are a reference to the ongoing pay talks. Niall O'Connor writes that the coalition stepped up its bid to buy re-election with $566 million pay deal that demands little in return from the country's 290,000 public servants. So it's a front-page opinion piece, effectively, of the opinion, the Irish Independent, that the government is trying to buy the election. And others suggesting, of course, that the money freed up by the sale of Aer Lingus might come in handy around about October time. Irish Times, O'Brien media ban faces court challenge. The Irish Times has a long history, of course, with Dennis O'Brien. The media right to publish statements made in the Dáil will be tested in the courts as senior members of government and opposition defend the use of parliamentary privilege on matters of public interest. More on the pay deal and plenty of sport, as you'd expect. Okay, in studio with me now is Owen Denver. He's a Belfast singer-songwriter, and it's great to have you in, Owen. How are you?
I'm fantastic. It's great to be here. Thanks very much.
And it's kind of coincidental, isn't it? You're just visiting Donegal.
Yeah, just figured I'd take a wee trip up, explore the site.
Fantastic.
Enjoy the weather.
Exactly. Well, you've plenty to... So you're going to stay for the weekend, or...?
I might have to. I've had some car trouble. I had to get a taxi here from the hotel because I left my lights on last night, so...
It's only a flat battery. You don't have to stay for the weekend because of a flat battery.
Through, yeah.
Do you know where the bonnet hatches, do you?
Yeah. I'm a musician. I'm a bit useless with anything outside. Yeah, music,
and you don't want to hurt your fingers because you've got your guitar there in front. Tell us a bit about... how you got into music.
I see
some notes in front of me that say you're self-learned. Is that correct?
Yeah, well, to an extent.
I grew up
as an orchestra boy. So I kind of started in violin and then went to viola, played in a lot of orchestras, met a lot of people. But really, my first love was the guitar. But I just kind of picked it up from listening to people like Damien Rice, Jeff Buckley, Radiohead, people like that. And yeah, that was just my passion.
And do you feel really that that you have those influence of those people now still in your music, or at least in your style of guitar play?
I'd like to hope so, because I think they're brilliant. But I wouldn't want to flatter myself too much.
Ah, you're all right.
Some people have told me there's like elements of people's songwriting that have come across, and I think it does reflect based on what you listen to, what you're inspired by.
As someone with minus negative musical talent, you'll excuse my ignorance in asking, you know, so when you're learning the violin and other string instruments, is there a crossover then between the guitar? I mean, they're all very different, but in terms of chords, and I mean, once do you have sort of a head start?
Well, I think the biggest advantage for me was that when I was learning the violin, it was all about sort of knowing what note everything was, how to read music and everything. Whereas when I picked up the guitar, I had no one telling me that I had to do that. So I used to play chords, but I had no idea what they were called. I just played them because I liked them.
Yeah.
So I ended up sort of figuring out my own chords, and it was kind of a little bit freer. So
sound really, like B.B. King. I mean, that was his kind of style. He wasn't a big chords guy, was he?
He was just everything incredible style.
Yeah, fantastic. Absolutely amazing. But, you know, it was more expression. Do you find you expressing yourself more with music rather than just playing it, if you know what I mean?
Absolutely, yeah. I was a pretty shy and quiet kid when I was at school, so I kind of needed it as a release. And then just over the years, my music got a bit less depressing, and now I write happy songs. So yeah.
I think that's the story of most teenagers.
You got a lot of angst to get out of your system.
Yeah, and how has your path been? So you're originally from Belfast. You started playing in orchestras in Belfast, but you went on, then you moved over to Scotland, did you?
I did, yeah. I've spent the last 2 years in Edinburgh. I studied music technology, but kind of got the fear, and I was like, is this actually like a real job, like me working as a musician? So I ended up working an IT job for 2 years and really not enjoying it. And I love Edinburgh and I love Scotland, and I go back there a lot because I got a lot of good friends over there. But really, I was a IT geek by day and then a musician by night. I was a resident in a cocktail bar over there.
You're sort of like Clark Kent during the day, and then you stuck the cape on and the guitar at night, that sort of thing. Did you have glasses on during the day that you took off? Then
I had a tie, so maybe that was
my... the same type of thing.
I tied it around my forehead when I was playing gigs. So.
And you write your own music. When that began, was that just a way of expressing yourself? As you say, you know, maybe you weren't the most communicative in a traditional sense. Is that how it panned out?
I think that was partly down to the fact that I had no teacher either, so I wasn't really told what to play. So I ended up just thinking, oh, that sounds cool. I'll write some lyrics with that. And it just kind of spawned from that.
And when you go back, I presume you wrote it in a book or something and you have access to it. When you go back and read it now, how does it feel? Do you recognise the person that was writing then?
I unfortunately do. I take my own pleasure from it, but I would never let anyone else listen to it. I feel like my music has taken a long journey.
Now, I've mentioned this before in the program. There's this amazing thing now whereby people can get their stuff out there, like the likes of YouTube. And you avail of YouTube quite a bit, do you?
YouTube is kind of my main mode of transport at the moment. The minute I've got an EP on the go, which is going to be my first sort of major release, I've invested a lot of time into it. All the money that I made in my IT job, I've since spent on my own microphones and studio time with a friend of mine, Andrew Doherty, and we're just like really working on it, like it's a whole album, but really it's just going to be like a summary.
And how are you hoping to release that? I mean, are you going to do it yourself? Or are you going to why does that work?
It's going to be self-released, and it's also going to be paired with a music video. So the first track is going to be a single, and then I'll just release it all together, see how it goes, see who picks it up, get on iTunes.
Exactly, and if something like, I mean, you know, you just need one, the right person to see it, and you're away. But you can build up a massive audience yourself. Anyway, I mean, obviously it has to be, you know, you want to make some money out of this, but, you know, with the likes of YouTube and what have you, and the money you've already invested, you can get your music to a massive audience as it is.
Absolutely, yeah, you've got Twitter, and YouTube, and radio stations to play on too.
And us supporting you, obviously.
Yeah, that's fantastic. What I mean? Yeah, I've already been asked to send the EP here when it's when
superb.
It's finished,
can't wait for it. How long have you been writing this EP? Is it all new stuff? Did you write? Did you go enter sort of a writing process specifically for this project, or did you already have a body of work that you picked from?
This was all written while I was in Edinburgh, so this was when I was performing. Just
is
on
it going
my
to
own.
Be really depressing songs about keyboards then and computer stuff?
It's not. Unfortunately, not.
Some
IT
there's a niche, you know, for IT.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
IT blues. Yeah,
all the big DJs are all big geeks. So.
I hate to anyone to sort of, especially ask someone to pigeonhole themselves, but you have mentioned artists and what have you. How would you describe your style if you could? And we're going to hear it and we'll judge for ourselves, but I mean, yourself, do you see yourself in a specific genre of music?
I kind of find it difficult because I've played a lot of different genres and I don't like to pigeonhole myself, but really when I play
live...
Well,
don't bother then. We'll not do it. Okay, we'll listen. Okay. Why do it if you don't want to?
People can judge for themselves.
And the EP, is it just going to be you and a guitar or...
I play a lot of instruments as well, so they're all on there too.
There's okay,
piano and strings. So. And I've had Peter McCauley from Ram's Pocket Radio. He's playing drums for me. I've played a lot of viola for him over the years, so this is kind of like...
Payback.
Yeah.
So when we get the EP and we play it, because obviously we might not have the setup then, bar the drums... Everything will be you, pretty much, would it?
Yeah, for the most part, yeah, because I don't really play the piano, but I just figured it'd be nice to have piano on it. So.
Is it Chinese chopsticks or whatever they call
it? It's not quite. I was kind of overambitious with it, and I literally spent about 2 weeks doing nothing but piano, so they get the piano parts really down.
Okay. You obviously have a great musical ear. Is there a history of that in your family? Do you have a musical family?
My dad can play chopsticks, but my mum played the guitar. And my granny is mad about music as well. Brilliant. She's from Scotland originally. Her mum was from there, so she's all chat about music and loves that we all play it.
Brilliant. What are you going to play for us then?
I'm going to play one of my songs called Jackhammer.
And is this going to be on the EP? Or
it's actually not, but it's on YouTube at the moment.
Okay, cool. And we'll get the details of how people can find you and subscribe. Do you want to come in and video this? Are you videoing? Is that your girlfriend?
It is, yeah.
She's standing. I mean, it's always going to be a reflection of herself.
Yeah, probably.
Do you want to come in? No? Come on in. How do you say, can you speak English in French? Part of you English? Okay.
She's a bit worried about speaking.
It's okay. You don't have to speak, but if she's got a video, you might as well come in and do it. All right, then. Owen Denver, what are we hearing again?
Called Jackhammer.
Take it away.
If you keep your head up high, good things are gonna happen to you. And God knows I could use a good thing about now. Then it comes along, someone to make you still believe in love. This is what you are, my heartbeat.
beats like a jackhammer. She goes by like she don't matter at all. Can't you see? I'm off my feet. Girl, I'm pulsing like a jackhammer. Rush your blood to the head and my balance is gone. And I see stars. And there she goes and knocks me out. Now, I don't even think about it. 'Cause you are all the thinking I could need. And God knows I was in a bad way until now. So you came along, someone to make you still believe in love. This is what you are. My heart beats like a jackhammer. She goes by like she don't matter at all. Can't you see? I'm off my feet. Girl, I'm pulsing like a jackhammer. Rush your blood to the head and my balance is gone. And I see stars. And there she goes and knocks me up. Oh, my heart, it's beating like a jackhammer. She goes by like she don't matter at all. Can't you see? I'm off my feet. Girl, I'm pulsing like a jackhammer. Rush your blood to the head and my balance is gone. And I see stars. And there she goes and knocks me out.
Absolutely brilliant. Well done. Thanks, Owen.
Thanks very much.
So where can people find you on YouTube?
You can find me at youtube.com/OwenDenverMusic.
D-E-N-V-I-R.
That's right.
It's spelled a little bit different. D-E-N-V-I-R Music. And you've got a load of videos up there and people can stay up to date with when you're... Uh-huh. When do you expect the EP to be available, the first single anyway?
I want to say end of July, but I don't want to make too heavy commitments.
But that's the...
It's not going to be released until it's totally 100%.
Yeah, but you're going to have to eventually say, this will do, you know? I've met musicians before, and 6 years later, no, it's not quite there.
It's not quite going to be Chinese Democracy.
And do you gig around Belfast, or maybe going to try and book some gigs to promote the EP, or what's the plan?
Hoping to get a little bit of an Irish tour on the go to try and sort of spread the word, and then get a bit of a road trip on the go as well.
Excellent.
So play here and there. I usually play... the odd time in Belfast. They've got a gig coming up on June the 12th in the Pavilion, and then the next gig after that will be the big launch.
Fantastic.
I'm quite excited about it.
Well, hopefully we see you in Donegal. I know there's bound to be someone listening that would at least love to get you to perform here locally as well. I'm not one about one fan, I'm one about like a venue show.
just someone in their house.
Yeah, exactly. It's fantastic. Thanks for coming down. You've only got a flat battery, you'll get that sorted, I'm sure. You get down and see Rory Gallagher. Festival's on this weekend.
Is that right?
Yeah. Down in Ballyshannon. You could go down there. It'd be a nice wee trip for you. Yeah. Seeing as you love the music. It's been a pleasure having you in, and let us know when the EP is available and get it to us, and we look forward to playing them.
Great. Thanks for having me.
Okay, that's Owen Denver. Back with more after the break. Okay, next in the studio, it's Sean Beattie. Sean, a very good morning to you. Thanks for coming in.
Good morning, Greg. How are you?
I'll just swing this mic there if you don't mind,
yes.
Sean.
Yes, okay, Greg. Thank you.
Lean back, but it was just pointing in the wrong direction. Right. And we're talking about Ballymacool House in Letterkenny. For those who don't know the history of it, we're going to talk a little later on about a really interesting musical connection, but give us the history of Ballymacool House.
Well, Ballymacool House is on Ballymacool Estate, and Ballymacool House is one of the great big houses of Ireland, a landlord house, so outside Letterkenny. And the boys came there in the late 1600s, and a house was built there initially, but later on, in about 1783, there was a John Boyd And he was the man who really put the place on the map, as it were. Mm-hmm. And he built the current building that's there at the present time. It's now quite a ruin, but it was a magnificent house.
Give us an idea of its magnificence at that time for those who may not be familiar with it.
Well, it was built in a very fine style. It was two stories. It had a great driveway. It was renowned for its trees and the landscape, and various people passed along. Writers who came to Letterkenny talked with Mr. Boyd's fine trees and his lands and so on. So there were very, very prominent people and highly renowned and mentioned in all the guidebooks and travel books.
And It's now fallen into a state of dereliction, has it?
It is now in a state of disrepair. That's a good way of describing it, yeah. It's gone the way of many of the big houses in Donegal, in fact, throughout Ireland. Many have been demolished, unfortunately. But thankfully, Ballymacool, at least the remains of it are still there. So that's something to be said for it.
And again, you know, I'm always conscious that not everyone knows precisely what... Is it beyond saving at this stage? Would it be a case of preserving it? Or could it be restored, would it be practical?
I think it would require a lot of money. In the current climate, like, I've seen better buildings being turned down, so it's an advanced stage of disrepair, as it were.
But it's a very important part of history, not a history that is comfortable. You know, everyone has their own take on it, but I mean, there's no doubt that these buildings and that building is an important part of history, and as you say, it's been recorded in the arts as well, going back centuries.
Yeah, when visitors came to Kenny, travel writers and so on, in the 1700s and 1800s, they talked about Ballymacool House, and it was a landmark building, one of the buildings that stood out, and it was a fine piece of architecture as well. And of course, the boys themselves, the people who lived there, were all very important people. They had held very important posts, in particular John Boyd's own family. They held positions like High Sheriffs of Donegal. They were Toll Masters of Letterkenny. They were Treasurers of Donegal. They were members of the Grand Jury. I mean, any title you care to mention. They were Judges of the King's Bench in Dublin.
Do we know how they come to such a level of authority or prominence?
They probably came to that level of prominence because they were members of the gentry. They had a certain status. They had land. They had income. And they stayed in Donegal, which is a good thing. Many of their compatriots would have left and become absentee landlords. But in fairness to the boys, they did stay there, you know.
And do we know when they vacated the house?
Well, that part of the story brings on up to about 1922, when the house was, it was attacked during the time of the Troubles.
Okay.
And
now, why was it targeted?
Well, I mean, it was, you know, they weren't Republicans, so okay. It was targeted for that reason.
Yes.
But then we find in 1922 that the house was targeted, as I said, and subsequently the house was put up for sale, and there was a Charles Boyd, sorry, there was a William and Charlotte took over about 1891. William and Charlotte Boyd took over about 1891. And they're very prominent unionists, and they signed the Covenant, they were involved. Charlotte was involved in the National Society for the Prevention of Cruelty to Children here in Letterkenny. It was about the 1940s, it was sold and taken over by a local family. Mm-hmm. And it was following that then that it went into disrepair.
Mm-hmm. Because I presume, with a building of that size and age, even just maintenance would be a massive undertaking.
Yeah, well, you find that in houses of that type, once people leave the building and the fires are put out
very quickly,
and of course the place had magnificent fireplaces as well, so it required a huge amount of money to keep it going. And it was also a period when the landlord class were under attack because of the Land Acts. Money wasn't coming in, rents were disappearing. Money just wasn't there. Basically, that's what happened. And gradually, many of the landed classes of the landlords headed back to England and left their properties behind.
What about its fittings, if you know what I mean? You talked about the fireplaces there, and I presume that there was a lot of... that type of thing. Is that still in place?
There are architectural features there now, but I mean, they're in a state of ruin. They've been damaged, they've been exposed to the weather. So there's nothing of any great significance apart from the four walls, really.
Mm-hmm. A caller asked, was the RIC ever stationed at Ballymacool House?
Not that I know of.
Oh, okay. They have a photo along those lines, but it's still a question nonetheless.
I'm not aware of that, now, but possibly, but I'm not sure.
Okay. Mm-hmm. It's funny too, these... It's not going to be too long before we start losing these parts of history, is it really? You know, I mean, as you say, a lot of these houses, and not just houses, but have already been demolished, have already gone away. Mm-hmm. What is the status of Ballymacool House in terms of, I mean, is there an appetite to get rid of it? Is there any story there?
To get rid of it?
Not to get rid of it, or to preserve it?
Yeah, in the beginning, like in the 1920s, there was an awful lot of hostility towards these landed gentry,
of course,
as they were called, because, I mean, they were the landlords, and they were, you know, they were involved and sometimes involved in evictions, but, I mean, the boys weren't the worst of them. So, in general, many of the landlords were absentees. So, in general, there was a sort of a hostility towards the landowning classes. And like because of that, people kind of turned against it, turned against them and their properties. But in the 1940s, you know, things were beginning to change. And by the 1950s and 60s, there was a feeling that these things should be preserved and restored, but in many cases it was too late to preserve them and restore them. So, like, I don't think anybody now would be calling for the preservation of Ballymacool House, but it's an important landmark and it's worth...
Well, that's really what I'm guessing at, you know, but it will be lost to time.
Yeah, well, if it remains as it is, you know, it will be lost through time. Yeah. So, but I can't see anybody, I haven't heard of anybody making a case for the retention of Ballymacool House in recent times. Although I'm sure there are people who would like to see it preserved in some state or some form.
Okay. Now, moving on then, I flagged at the top of the show a connection to the Beatles and a very famous song by the Beatles, I presume.
The connection there is Patty Boyd. And my attention was drawn to this recently by a heading which you have there in the Daily Mail. Patty Boyd, she got married again. At the age of 71. Interestingly enough, she called herself Boyd. She still retains the name Boyd.
Okay.
And Patty married George Harrison. And everybody knows George Harrison. Of course, he was the lead guitarist with the Beatles. And Patty began life, we're told, as a shampoo girl in a salon belonging to Elizabeth Arden. And then she moved from there to Vogue magazine. She got on the covers of Vogue. Eventually, she became a model. And she was given a part in one of the Beatles' films, A Hard Day's Night. And it was through that she met George Harrison.
And it's claimed, was the inspiration behind a couple of big Beatles hits too?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, she married George Harrison about 1966. And it was then that George Harrison wrote the song for her, Something, which is it's supposed to be the second most covered song that was made by the Beatles.
Mm-hmm. Great song too, actually.
It is, yeah, absolutely. So she's married to George Harrison for about 10 years, from 1966 to 77. But in the meantime, she got involved with Eric Clapton. And Clapton also wrote a song for her as well. I think it's called Layla or
Layla. Yeah, you've got me on my knees.
I'm not familiar with all of Clapton's songs, but he did write for her as well.
Very good. And her connection, she's a great, great. She's a great.
Well, she'd be a cousin. I would describe her as a cousin of the Boyds. The last of the Boyds were there in Ballymacool. Colonel Boyd died about 1958. I think he was the last of the Boyds. He was born in Ballymacool, last member of the family. So she'd be a cousin of his.
But just time for this question. A caller says, I heard Old Boyd was buried at Ballymacool House. Do you know if this is correct?
It's possible that there was a tradition of landlords having their own private graveyards. That's quite possible, but I don't know the location of it.
Sean Beattie, it's been an absolute pleasure having you in. Thank you so much. And it's an interesting history, an interesting... we got to the Beatles in the end. It's funny how it can work.
Sure. That's Derek Kennedy's connection to the Beatles and the greatest band in the world. Okay.
I don't wanna leave.
Oh, Tom Crossan was on to let us know that Old Boyd is actually buried in and around Ballymacool House. It's an area fenced off with his dog, no less. I don't know the dog's name, however. Eric Clapton, we're told by a listener, wrote Wonderful Tonight for Patty Boyle. We said Layla, so it was Wonderful Tonight. So she obviously was a very impressioning, what's the word I'm trying to look for? Influential and striking woman to have those songs written about her, no doubt. 086 770 0555. Keep your texts coming through to the programme. 07491 25000. Yvonne is waiting to angrily answer your call. Or you can tweet me at Greg Hughes too. Okay, something completely different now. We're talking about orthorexia with Freya Drohan. Freya, good morning.
Morning. How are you?
Orthorexia. Have I the pronunciation correct there?
Yes, orthorexia.
Orthorexia. Yeah. Okay, and it's an eating disorder, but it's a little unusual, and I say unusual in that perhaps not everyone knows about it, in that it's connected really to obsessively eating healthily, obsessively.
It is. It's a little bit different to the more well-known eating disorders, which would probably be anorexia, bulimia, and body dysmorphia. And a lot of people don't actually understand it exists because people would think, sure, there's no such thing as being too healthy. But orthorexia more so refers to the kind of mental side of it, in that it's more like obsessive compulsive disorder when it comes to obtaining the perfect diet, obsessively exercising, and kind of overanalyzing everything that you're putting into your body.
So would you say it's more connected then with, as you say, OCD there, as opposed mm-hmm. to the eating disorders that we'd be more familiar with?
It is classified as an eating disorder, but it is more, it's more of a newer phenomenon.
Yeah.
It's only actually kind of come into the public knowledge since about 1997.
And I think we're going to hear, I beg your pardon, sorry, Fred, I think we're going to hear more about it, would you imagine, because of the fact that more people are eating healthy.
Exactly. I think there's a very big connection as well to social media, and a lot of people probably aren't aware that they could suffer from it themselves, especially if, you know, it can start with something as simple as a health kick and just wanting to, you know, eat better produce and stuff, like the way an anorexic person originally could have just become kind of a little bit more aware of, you know, eating better, and then suddenly it kind of progresses into this obsession. But orthorexia is more you're overanalyzing every food you put into your mouth, as opposed to restricting calories, which would be more associated with anorexia.
Now, as well as being the fashion, beauty and lifestyle writer for The Independent, you're also someone who was affected by this disorder and speaking out publicly to raise awareness. Can you perhaps take us through how it affected you? I presume you started eating healthily to begin with, and as far as you were concerned, you were doing the right thing at that point?
Exactly. And I mean, obviously, it's brilliant when someone wants to kind of take control of their health and fitness. But as I think, it does become an issue when you do start to kind of feel you've no control over what you're putting into your body. And the symptoms that people might kind of start to get worried about when they see them are kind of obsessively reading labels, overanalyzing every single nutrient, whether that's a micronutrient or a macronutrient, Googling everything. I would have, you know, Googled, is this okay? Is this okay?
And was it because you were fear of, in some way, poisoning your body? Or was it that, you know, I'm so determined to eat healthily that I have to ensure there's absolutely nothing wrong with what I'm eating? Do you understand what I'm saying? Where was the obsession there?
More so, I think for me as well, because I'm constantly surrounded by, you know, different images of these women and everything. I think with me, I always did eat healthy, so I do actually enjoy healthier food as opposed to, you know, kind of diet like fast food and everything. But I think when I wasn't seeing the results that I wanted to see, that's when it really kicked up a gear, and I was, you know, kind of avoiding social situations because I was like, I can't eat that kind of food. You know, right. I didn't want to go out for dinner because I didn't know what would be in the meals that I wasn't preparing myself. I got quite obsessed with supplements. You know, I was like, I must be deficient in this. This is the reason for this. Also, inventing food allergies is a big symptom. So I would have thought, you know, oh, I'm lactose intolerant. I can't have any dairy.
It's almost like a hypochondriac
relate to food,
yeah.
Isn't it? Sort of, you know, I know it's not the right terminology, and we have orthorexia to describe that, but it kind of feels like that to me.
And it's quite ironic as well, because the more you worry about these kind of things, the worse effect it has on your body. So you're worrying about being super healthy, but that in turn can raise, you know, the cortisol levels in your body because of, you know, you're stressing and you're not getting enough sleep, which has a disastrous effect on your body. And it just, it becomes kind of like you're eating these supposed healthy foods. And a lot of it as well, it's hard because there's so much misinformation, you know. I would have always thought fruit is great, and then suddenly someone would turn around and say, no, fruit is sugar. So
yeah, good sugars, bad sugars, all this type of thing.
Good sugars, bad sugars, you know, everyone for years and years we would have avoided fats, and then suddenly, you know, everyone is saying, no, you need to include things like avocados in your diet.
And one minute you're told to juice it, and the next minute you're told to...
Exactly. So you kind of, you get so confused and you don't know who to turn to.
How long did you live with this before... Either you, it's a two-part question, I suppose. How long were you like this before you said there's something wrong here, or someone said, look, Freya, you know, there's something not right here?
A good few months. It was actually someone I work with who does lifestyle, and she said, I think you have this. And then we laughed about it, and because I was always kind of the go-to person in the office saying, what are you doing this week? You know, what's your health trend this week? And because I was writing about it a lot, I would cover a lot of lifestyle for The Independent. I didn't really think about it. I just thought, you know, oh, I'm great. I'm always ahead of the trend with all these new kind of health and living fads.
But you were in an awkward situation, though, because it is your job, and it's also a condition. And there, I presume, was a strong possibility that one could influence or complicate the other, particularly your job and your professional side of life.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And as you said, I would do a lot of fashion and beauty. So, you know, at one stage I'm there, I'm extremely careful about what I eat, or I would exercise a lot. And then I'm, you know, looking at these images of these kind of superhuman women, and I'm going, what is it that I'm not doing that my body doesn't look the way theirs does? So I think I actually, probably my mom was the person who kind of told me, she was like, you need to take a step back. You're probably doing yourself more damage because, you know, you're burning the candle at both ends.
Yeah. Now we're getting tight in time for you, which is unfortunate.
Okay, yeah.
I want to know how you got help and how effective was it for you?
Well, for anyone who's kind of worried if they have the symptoms and they're looking for someone to turn to, Bodywise is the national charity, and they are great. There's a couple of other charities around the country. There is the Merino Therapy Centre. They have the Institute for Eating Distress Studies, and there is the Eating Disorder Resource Centre of Ireland. With me, I actually thought the best thing to do would be to turn to a nutritionist, which I think is the best thing. So I said,
it took it out of your hands, didn't it? I mean, you trust a professional.
Yeah, you really need to, because, I mean, I once went to the doctor to get a blood test and she said, stop turning to Google. You know, Dr. Google is not going to help. So with what I had to do was say to a nutritionist, this is when I train, this is my sleeping hours, this is my working hours. And she came up with a plan for me. Her name is Amanda, and she runs an online kind of business called Recalibrated Bodies. And I think that's when I kind of thought, okay, this person, she's sitting down, she's analysing my whole life, and she's going to tell me what I should and shouldn't eat.
And do you feel you've got the balance? I beg your pardon, Frey. You feel you've got the balance right now? Because obviously the flip side of that would be to live completely unhealthy and put anything in your mouth that you want to. So, you know, you have...
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the double-edged sword, in that you're so worried and stressed all the time that you're not eating as well as you can be, that then you can just kind of lose control and then binge as well. So definitely, I think going to someone who really knows their stuff, who has a qualification in it, and telling them what you're worried about. So whether that's your trainer in the gym saying, you know, am I doing the right thing? Maybe I'm doing too much cardio. And they will help you, and they will kind of make things more clear.